All right, I think we will go ahead and get started. Again, welcome all. It's Mitchell Warren from AVAC, and delighted to welcome you all to another in our webinar series on research and reality, a series that we've been running all year consistent with our AVAC report, looking at a range of issues about translating research and evidence into impact and reality. This mini-series that's been taking place the last couple of months comes out of the International AIDS Conference in Melbourne in July this year, where we've done a series of calls to really look at some of the major topics and themes that were raised at the conference. And some of you I know have joined past calls. For those of you who've missed any or all of them, they're all archived on the AVAC website. Today's call actually may be the one that is focusing on one of the issues that was most top of mind throughout the conference. And again, occurred with more energy just a couple of weeks ago in New York at the United Nations General Assembly. And that, of course, is a focus on a new target-setting process, and UNAIDS has been at the forefront of that, and I'm incredibly delighted to welcome Chris Collins from UNAIDS. Many of you on the line know Chris with many different hats, recently as the head of policy at AMFAR, and further back in his career, actually directed AVAC. So it is a great pleasure to welcome my predecessor back to an AVAC webinar. Chris has a long history of advocacy, policy, and community engagement related to the really broad AIDS response, from AIDS vaccine advocacy to prevention and treatment, to really working over the last couple of years around getting us all to think about being ending AIDS advocates. So I'm delighted to welcome Chris here. We are keeping the call in muted mode so that it can be recorded and put on the website as well, as will the background slides for the call. We do encourage questions to come throughout the call. You can put those in the chat feature if you are on the web interface on ReadyTalk. You can also send emails at any point to avac@avac.org, and we'll put those questions in the queue. And when Chris is done with the presentation, we'll also open the line, and you'll be able to unmute yourself to ask questions directly of Chris. So with that, it is a really great honor and pleasure to welcome Chris from UNAIDS to present on AIDS Targets for Impact.
Thank you, Mitchell. I am thrilled to be on an AVAC webinar, so thanks so much for inviting me. And thanks to everybody who joined. Mitchell, can I control these slides from here, or do you do that?
We can do it either way. I think you do have the power. If you just click on the next slide, it should advance.
Aha, I have the power. Okay, great. So I thought I would just make a presentation, go quickly through the slides I have. It'll take fewer than 20 minutes, and then really the bulk of this is just for question and answer and comments. Does that sound good?
That's perfect.
Wonderful. Okay, well, so hello, everybody. Thank you for joining the webinar. I'm Chris Collins. I'm with the Community Mobilization Division at UNAIDS. I'm based in Geneva. I want to tell you a little bit about where we are with target setting, and then really hear from you about your thoughts about how this could be useful, any input you have into how we can use those targets, how we can work together on putting them to use. And again, I think most of today is really about a dialogue. So with that, let me dive in, and I'll go quickly, and we can come back to anything you have a question about. I think the first question is, why set targets at this point? What's the use of them? And, you know, I think the targets we're talking about today are intended to drive a set of priorities. Now, targets we've had in the past in HIV largely have been single issue. 3x5 was about treatment. 15x15, again, about treatment. In the United States, through PEPFAR, we had 6x13, focused again on treatment. The new targets that we're talking about today recognize that to move forward in terms of addressing the epidemic, we really need to be thinking on a variety of fronts and get it right, on treatment certainly and in other ways. So targets that we're talking about are set to drive a variety of priorities, including making it clear that everyone has the right to treatment services, the right to prevention services, and to being free of discrimination. They're intended to drive ambition of policymakers and programmers and others in a time of limited resource constraints to keep that ambition for scale-up of evidence-based services going, to drive new domestic and external financing for HIV services, to improve the equity of service delivery, and do much, much, much better in terms of reaching key population groups, marginalized populations, to really shine a light on quality and measure not just quantity of services provided, but the quality of it and in treatment, to really be thinking about retention and care, to focus everybody's attention, keep our eyes on the prize, focus on are we accomplishing outcomes? What do we need to do to accomplish outcomes? What are the game changers? And finally, I think that, you know, the targets are only going to be useful if they help us tackle the specific barriers that stand in the way of getting services that work to everybody who wants them. Targets are going to be not have impact, and they're going to do damage if they lead us to avoiding the tough issues or minimizing the challenges involved in responding to HIV. So we need to be talking, I think, about how to use bold targets in a way that really helps us tackle the big barriers and challenges that are in the way. So first off, I want to just set the targets we're talking about today in the context of broader targets that UNAIDS has been involved in. Overarching, the vision that UNAIDS has put out there is the three zeros. Zero new infections, zero AIDS-related deaths, zero discrimination. That's kind of the visionary place under which UNAIDS targets are set. But within that is a much more specific goal of making substantial reductions in the toll of the epidemic, substantially reducing HIV infection and mortality and HIV-related stigma by 2030, so that we can say that we're ending the epidemic. And language like that, UNAIDS and others, civil society, some parts of civil society as well, have been pushing for that ending the AIDS epidemic by 2030 language goal within the sustainable development goals, the post-2015 goals that are now being debated within the UN. Now, underneath that, UNAIDS is also using the Strategic Investment Framework, which came out a couple years ago and which a lot of people were involved in. UNAIDS this year has been doing modeling to ask the question, what programmatic levels do we need to be at in order to achieve that ending the epidemic goal by 2030? In other words, if we're serious about really seriously bending the curves of HIV infection and mortality in the next 15 years and bringing them substantially down in the next 15 years, what do we have to do in the next 5 years in terms of delivering things that work? What scale do we need to get to? So we're looking at goals, programmatic goals for 2020, and that's what we're talking about today, in three areas: treatment, prevention, and non-discrimination. The treatment goals is where we put something out there and we'll spend most of the time on that. Prevention and non-discrimination programmatic goals we've never set before, and, you know, we're learning. It's time for those, but we've never had those before, so we can talk about the process for that. But all three of those things, obviously, delivering treatment, prevention, and non-discrimination services are all part of achieving, are all integrated in achieving the end of the epidemic and kind of moving towards the vision of the three zeros. Okay, so let's go right into slides about the treatment targets, and these were prepared by the treatment target unit, this special unit at UNAIDS focusing on the treatment targets. And these slides were prepared by them. So the consultations that, the way that these targets were derived over the last year were a series of consultations. There was a treatment advisory commission that included science and academics and members of civil society and others who helped put them together, think them through. There were consultations that involved policymakers, programmers, civil society in every region. There were a few civil society consultations, one in Amsterdam, one in Geneva, and a webinar on data sources for civil society, and several other consultations that went into this. And what this resulted in was targets that we're now calling 90-90-90. And let me say specifically what that means here. 90% by 2020, 90% of all people living with HIV will know their HIV status. Of those, 90% of all people diagnosed with HIV will receive sustained antiretroviral therapy. And as a subset of that, 90% of all people receiving antiretroviral therapy will have durable viral suppression. So, if you do the math and you multiply 0.9 a couple times, you get to 73%. And that's the kind of the end target here of the 90-90-90. 73% of all people living with HIV will be virally suppressed. That's about a threefold increase in viral suppression beyond where we are right now. Now, this slide is prepared by WHO, and it shows the progression of WHO guidelines in terms of initiation of treatment. And where we are right now, that red button, of course, as you know, with the recommendations from WHO, at initiating at a CD4 count of 500 or less, but offering ART regardless of CD4 count for some groups, including serodiscordant couples, pregnant women, and children under 5. What that adds up to is that right now about 29 million people fall under eligibility for HIV treatment, according to the WHO. And what the UNAIDS targets, the 90-90 targets do, they're looking forward 5 years, and they're making an assumption that WHO will keep moving down this progression towards everybody living with HIV being eligible for AIDS treatment if they want it. One thing I want to raise here is there's a phrase that may, not everybody may like. It's test and treat. It's at that right-hand box. Again, that was WHO language. What I mean here is not, is really more like just moving towards a time in which everybody who has is living with HIV is offered treatment and offered support in getting treatment. It absolutely does not mean anything like coercion or insisting people be on treatment. It is just a measure of about 34, 35 million people now would be have access to treatment. Right now, we're at global ART coverage of about 37% if you look at adults and children, and that's basically about 13 million people on treatment divided by about 35 million people living with HIV. And as you know, treatment, antiretroviral treatment coverage is different in different regions. This gives you a sense of what it looks like in different parts of the world right now. And again, this is percentage of all people living with HIV. And what the folks who put together the treatment targets have done is gathered evidence for the potential to get very high rates at each level of the targets. And I want to go over some of the evidence they've compiled. So evidence showing that high rates of HIV testing can be achieved. Well, in places like Rwanda, 80% or over of the population has been tested at least once for HIV. And here you see a variety of countries where the percentage of people who've been tested at least once is really quite high. Also, we'll note that in the United States, one of the things the United States does well in its epidemic, and it doesn't do everything well in its epidemic, but one thing it does well is identify people living with HIV. So about 82% of people living with HIV, it is thought, in the United States know their status. In Latin America, it's estimated that about 70% of people living with HIV already know their status, and here you can see how that those estimates break out by country, with Cuba being near 90%, Barbados and Brazil being very, very high. So next, the second 90, evidence that including people who know that they are living with HIV in treatment, getting very high rates of treatment, is also possible. Here are coverage rates for two countries, 69% of people living with HIV, and again, that's all people living with HIV, not just those who fall under the current WHO guidelines. In Rwanda and Botswana, it's 69%. That's where they are right now. And keep in mind that the 90-90-90 targets are setting a deadline for 5 years from now. So right now, there are countries like these two, which are a very high rate of people on ART. And there are examples of countries where retention in ART is very high as well. Here is a chart showing that very high rates of retention in Venezuela, Chile, Cuba, Mexico, other countries. Finally, the evidence that we have on achieving high viral suppression levels among people who choose to be on treatment. Well, in a country like Rwanda, this is site-by-site measures of the percentage of people who are on ART in Rwanda. But as you can see, overall, a nationally representative sample of people living with HIV in that country, 83% have achieved viral suppression. In Latin America, viral suppression has been achieved by a very high percentage of people who are on ART in many countries, including, as you can see, Uruguay, Mexico, Brazil, Honduras, Barbados. Now, reaching the 90-90 targets and the kinds of best cases that I've just shown is definitely not going to be easy. There are big challenges in the way, and again, the targets are going to be meaningless unless we use them to tackle those key challenges head on. In the treatment targets report, which I'll talk more about in a minute, they lay out six major challenges among the many that stand in the way that we need to grapple with in terms of achieving or getting close to the targets. One is societal, so social impediments, unequal legal status, marginalization of people, including key populations like gay men and other men who have sex with men, people who inject drugs, sex workers, young women. These and other groups are at very high rates of infection and in many, many cases just have not been adequately addressed in terms of the response, have lower uptake of treatment, and face a whole host of legal, social, and other challenges in terms of accessing treatment. The 10% of people that aren't part of each of the 90s, we just simply have to make absolutely sure that doesn't mean that's where all the key population groups fall. A second key challenge is diversity of facility costs, and I would also say drug pricing in general. Third is gaps in the treatment cascade. Fourth is specific delivery challenges. Fifth is just finding the money, the financing. And then six is addressing the epidemic in adolescents and children. So what I'm going to do now is take a subset of the slides and just look at one of these challenges, gaps in the treatment cascade. So this is the treatment cascade that I'm sure everybody's seen. On the left-hand side of the bar is the total number of people living with HIV in that particular setting, and you go on down the cascade to the last bar being the percentage of people living with HIV who have achieved viral suppression. Now, this cascade, as you know, is different in every setting. This one happens to be for adults in sub-Saharan Africa, and what you can see is a huge fall-off from bar one to the second bar going to the right. The majority of people who are living with HIV don't know their status. It is worth noting that when people know their status in this cascade, there's pretty good rates of people receiving ART and being under viral suppression, but a big challenge here in terms of people knowing their status. So cascade from another setting, this one from Vietnam, and here you see a very different picture. Really high rates of people living with HIV knowing their status, and then a big drop-off in terms of linkage to care and staying in care, and then a complete black hole of knowledge, and just not knowing where we stand in terms of viral suppression for this population. And that, you know, that is part of a story of right now not having access to viral load testing in many parts of the world being one of the challenges in terms of realizing these 90-90-90 targets. Another cascade, this one from Colombia, different picture again, a low rate of people living with HIV knowing their status, but pretty good rates in terms of people who are diagnosed with HIV being in care and staying in care. So what we're seeing here is that every situation is different. Particular barriers need to be addressed along the cascade in different settings, and there are different barriers in different settings, and obviously that's true when we think about social and legal issues in terms of what's inhibiting care. So the treatment targets report that kind of goes into more detail on this, and it is now available. I can send it to anyone who wants, and I think Mitchell may have actually included it on the invite email. It is actually this report that's out now is rewritten. The draft discussion paper had been issued at the Melbourne conference. In August, we saw input from people widely about the report, got amazingly good input on the report. It's gone through an edit and came out last month at the UN General Assembly event. Some of the core elements that are in that report, in addition to what I've shared with you already, is that all of this, all of our approaches in terms of getting treatment and other services out need to be founded in a human rights approach. That's absolutely essential. That means attention to marginalized populations. It means all services are offered free of coercion. It means that everybody has their own individual choice about whether to accept or not services, and always respecting personal choice and providing information so that people can make informed choices about whether they want to receive treatment or any other services. It's worth noting that the one advantage, one thing that's different here is that we have not an absolute number target, but rather a percentage target. What's good about that is that it can be applied in any single country and for any single population, that whether it's gay men or other men who have sex with men, we ought to be achieving 90s for that population. In any particular country, you can plug in the denominator of people living with HIV and get your target for 90-90-90 within that setting. So they can be moved from country to country setting. Quality is a major priority within the treatment targets report and this effort. The viral load as the viral suppression as the endpoint marker here obviously is shining a light on the importance of retention and quality services and helping people be successful in treatment. Equity of access is primary here. There's no way to accomplish the 90s without absolutely making work among key populations and better access to services among key populations a front and center issue. 90-90-90 really is for everybody, for every population. So it is not about just reaching the easiest to reach 90%. But anyway, in using this, we need to think about how to make that true. And then the last point is just that the report really makes clear how important speed is, that we really need to accelerate scale up and, right now in order to reach the target. Status of the targets, well, as I said, the 90-90-90 treatment report is out. It's revised and available. It was formally released at the UN General Assembly Fast Track event, which happened in New York last month. The 90-90-90 target idea won broad support there. Both President Zuma from South Africa was president, and he endorsed the 90-90-90 targets, as did the United States Secretary of State, John Kerry, and other world leaders there came out in support. Another thing that was announced at that UNGA event, which UN General Assembly event, which is related, is an announcement about a deal made between the Republic of South Africa, the Clinton Foundation, UNAIDS, and Roche Pharmaceuticals to steeply bring down the cost of viral load tests, and that's part of making these targets a reality. That's one important, but only one of the many pieces we need to put together now to move towards progress towards these targets, is making viral load testing more available. Now, many people, when they commented in on the first version of the treatment report in August, said, where are the targets for prevention? Where are the targets for not anti-stigma or rights or non-discrimination? And so we're beginning work on that, on targets in both those areas. Very soon, I will be writing people very broadly, asking for input on what those targets should look like. We're developing ideas about what those should look like, but this really will be an interactive process where people will have a chance to have meaningful input on what those targets are. I will say that one aspect of the prevention target was named by Michelle Sidibe, the Executive Director of UNAIDS, at the UN General Assembly event last month, where he identified a target for 2020 of bringing annual HIV incidence down from 2.1 million to 500,000 people annually. But other aspects of the prevention target, including how key populations and others would be treated and these sorts of coverage pieces, those are things that are open for discussion. You know, a lot of people have looked at the treatment targets and said, that's really bold. I don't think that's achievable. And I think the real test of targets is whether they're used to drive progress. You know, the 3x5 initiative, which was getting 3 million, the goal of getting 3 million people on HIV treatment by the year 2005, it wasn't achieved until 2 years after that. We missed that target by 2 years. But in the process, 3x5 radically changed people's understanding of what the issue was. And it made it, a lot of people bought into the idea that treatment needed to be more rapidly scaled up and made available to everybody during that time. So we need to think about how to use these targets to maximum impact. So what I really want to hopefully can talk about now and then keep talking about in the future is how do we put the targets to work? What can we do from Community Mobilization Office working together with you to make the targets useful in advocacy in countries? And we're really seeing the need about this, right? Because many countries are engaged now in doing their Global Fund concept notes. We're already seeing that people's ambitions are coming up against funding ceilings within those Global Fund envelopes. There's not enough money there. PEPFAR has been flatlined for years. There's financial strains. So how do we use these targets to keep the ambition going and call the question and drive new funding and the most strategic use of funding? One thing I really want to hear now in the future is what can we provide? Are there advocacy and analysis materials to help translate the targets for advocacy at a national level? One advocate has suggested we help civil society, work with civil society to develop scorecards and other accountability measures for national level advocacy. Another advocate suggested that we work with civil society organizations to bring together regional strategy meetings with civil society to talk about how to put these targets to work. We could sponsor webinars and other dialogues with civil society organizations. We can always connect advocates in country to regional and country-based UNH staff, and we can help facilitate contact between civil society with government donors and industry. This visual you see here, Fast Track and in the AIDS epidemic, that's what the UN General Assembly event was called, and UNAIDS is now in the process of putting together what the next step is, what Fast Track means in terms of the follow-through of what we can do in each country to help drive this forward. For the Community Mobilization Division, I think it's a real organizing principle for us. Last slide. Just a word about what we do in community mobilization. We do a whole lot of work around documenting community-provided services, why they're important, community-driven evidence like the stigma index, youth engagement, faith-based advocacy, working with civil society on advocacy around post-2015, the Sustainable Development Goals, working with people living with HIV in the UN to push advocacy, again, working on prevention and treatment and non-discrimination targets, trying to put them to use. We're planning a variety of kinds of communications vehicles that would, for example, help share the implications, help engender a dialogue around the implications of the latest research for policy and advocacy. And again, we're always available to help connect civil society folks with UNAIDS staff in regions and countries. And there is my email address if you want to be on the list for regular updates about targets and other things. And also I'll be updating on targets and other things we're doing on Twitter, and there's my Twitter account. Thank you very much.
Great. Chris, thank you so much. I'll let you take a deep breath there. A number of questions have come in via email and some on the chat feature as well. And I also want to make sure we take plenty of time to leave the line wide open for questions and comments. As you can see, you can continue to put things in the chat feature. You can email to avac@avac.org, and you can unmute your line by pressing *7. I would ask that you introduce yourself, ask your question, and then remute yourself so we can keep the line nice and clear for the recording, because it will all be posted on the website, along with, as Chris said, links to the various documents that Chris referred to. So with that, perhaps I'll just open it up and see, before I go to some of the questions that have come in, if anyone has immediate comments, questions, or reflections for Chris. Again, star 7 to unmute yourself. Ooh, is that someone trying to ask a question?
Yes, this is Daryl Dixon. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Daryl.
Good morning, Warren. How are you? And good morning, Chris. This is Daryl Dixon calling from Southfield, Michigan, the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan, in the United States. I enjoyed your presentation thoroughly. My question is, I would be interested in speaking with the African Union leadership regarding new preventive measures relative to new cases of HIV and AIDS. I've emailed them on several occasions to the info line, which is posted on the net. And I'd like to know if there's a probability that you could assist or warn in facilitating such a meeting.
If you drop me, let me put my email address back up. If you drop me an email about that, I will connect you with UNAIDS staff in our Washington office, and I'm hoping they can connect you from there. If not, follow back up with me.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. We already have the email. Thank you.
Great. Other questions on the line? Chris, a number of questions have come in both before the call and then during the email here that are all kind of different aspects of the same, I think, question in some regards, and that is this question of measuring progress in real time or at an interim way. You know, you described the work to set these up for 90-90-90 by 2020, and then the idea of, as you say, in the fast track to end the epidemic by 2030. So a number of people have asked, both at a global level and at their own country levels, what's the process for measuring progress in real time in an interim basis?
Yeah, and I think the best reference on the issues around data reporting speed and quality is the report that came out from AVAC and AMFAR, I guess, a couple of months ago. And I will just say that I've heard from a lot of people here that, you really got it right, that there's so much in there that makes a lot of sense. So I think that's a great read for someone who wants to understand the state of data issues. You know, that said, I do think that UNAIDS really is moving towards trying to improve data frequency of reporting and then also quality. People have really heard it in terms of the key populations quality and need for better data around there. I don't have an update report to what you had in your AVAC Infar paper. I don't have more to say at this point. But it's actually something, Mitchell, that maybe, you and I can follow up about, and you may want to communicate to everybody, or I can communicate to everybody. But, I mean, I guess the bottom line is to say, as Jim Kim, once said about the 3x5 initiative, they didn't, in the end, have all the money they wanted available for that initiative to be everything they imagined it might be. But one thing that made the difference about 3x5 is they reported every 6 months on progress towards the ultimate goal. So reporting and accountability is essential to make this work. And I think the fact that, UNAIDS is going down this road and really investing in the follow-through to 90-90-90 means that you can expect to see more frequent and higher quality data.
Great. You just toward the end there, you mentioned something about the investments around 3x5, and so a number of actually questions did come in as well about the price tag for this. So even before we get to prevention and the non-discrimination targets, just for the 90-90-90 target, was there a costing exercise that accompanied that so people know what the global price tag is, or even at a national level what the investment should be at the optimal in terms of resources to make that happen?
Yes, there was. There was a costing exercise that the Program Coordinating Board, which is like the advisory board for the board of directors for UNAIDS, in December of last year said, come up with a new treatment target. And UNAIDS, what it decided to do was come up with targets around treatment and prevention services. It started a costing exercise with a whole variety of inputs. And the 90-90-90 goals are kind of founded in the metrics of that, and as is the 500,000, reducing HIV incidence to 500,000 by 2020. The function of that, costing exercise really did was come up with targets in a different way than we've come up with targets before. In the past, like 3x5 was, the cornerstone was, we're here, we want to get to there. Whereas the way this costing exercise did was say, if we want to massively bring down HIV incidence and mortality by 2030, if we're serious about doing that, let's back up and figure out where we need to be programmatically at 2020. So if we're real about getting to substantial reductions in 15 years, where do we need to be in 5 years? And so at that exercise, costing has been part of it. The costs associated are being finalized, and I expect those will be at World AIDS Day.
And a follow-on to that from someone here, is that costing, is that going to be treatment only or treatment heavy, or will that actually look, will that also be looking at the prevention and non-discrimination targets that you talk about being in development? Will those be integrated into the costing?
My understanding, and I really think I'm right about this, is that it will include costing for treatment, a variety of prevention interventions, and for critical enablers, because so that includes the community mobilization, community-provided services, efforts to address legal and social impediments, those kinds of things. Because again, it is the costing exercise, the whole foundation of it is the strategic investment framework, tweaked a bit with some new evidence in it. But as you know, the strategic investment framework included critical enablers, you know, getting at those social and other barriers as key to getting the job done.
Great. So a number of questions have come in, and I'm going to try to give an order that makes some logic based on some of the things you just said. One relates to the issue of viral load, and you did mention that at the UN General Assembly, the discussion about viral load, but someone's asking here about how do you see ramping up viral load suppression as a goal when viral load testing is really not widely available, and maybe you could elaborate a bit on what was announced at UNAIDS at the UN General Assembly about viral load, and then what might be some key next steps with respect to viral load.
Well, I mean, it's 2014. It's simply not possible to get a global, an accurate global measure of where we are on viral suppression globally for everyone living with HIV. Because, you know, as you're saying, those measurements aren't out in the field. Hopefully, one thing the 90-90-90 treatment target does is it drive a whole variety of things, right? But one of the things it drives is people's access to technology that can tell them how well they're doing on treatment. In other words, viral load measure as being one of those. So, it is essential for these targets to really mean something for viral load to be measures to be much more much cheaper and much more available. That's one of the barriers, really. That's you've called it out. You know what happened at the event at the UN General Assembly, and in addition to really kind of releasing the report on the treatment targets, was to announce this deal between a pharmaceutical company, the Republic of South Africa, and the Clinton Foundation, with UNAIDS involved, to steeply bring down. What was involved was guaranteeing a bulk that there would be a big quantity of purchase of viral load measures, and with that came a cost reduction. So that was something. So you know that is one important first step, just a first step in terms of making that real and getting viral load out to everybody. But definitely, that's a major priority of all this.
Great. Somewhat related about pricing and financing all of this, a question came in about the issue of drug pricing and to obviously scale up to this 90-90-90. And a question came in particularly around some of the trade policies and pricing, and a particular question related to the TRIPS flexibilities and pressure coming from different quarters to push prices up perhaps, and wanting to know what UNAIDS's view on that is and what is the plan to address issues around compulsory licensing, TRIPS flexibility within the context of what would clearly be scaled up service provision?
Well, affordable drugs, cheap medicines that are high quality are just absolutely essential. I mean, drug pricing is absolutely central to making this work. There's no question about it. First line, second line, and beyond. It's a huge issue. It's an area that ITPC and other organizations have really led on. I think that it needs to be an increasing part of all of our work going forward. I don't have an official UNAIDS position on that, although I think what I just said is one part of the UNAIDS position. But I can get that for you, Mitchell, if you want. I can kind of dig up what the latest statement on all that is. But I really welcome ideas from people about how we can be useful in that space, how we can support organizations like ITPC and others, in leading in that area. But I think, there's just, that's one example of how, the targets have to be about shining a light on big issues like drug pricing, and not doing the opposite and making it seem like this can happen without big changes.
Sure. So, you mentioned, I think, happily for many of us on the line, the developing process of prevention and non-discrimination targets, when so much of the focus has been around treatment. And a number of questions have come in related to the timelines for those, the processes for those, and also, can you give some examples of what you either as Chris or the community mobilization team at UNAIDS, what might some of the non-discrimination and prevention targets look like?
I think on non-discrimination, I think they're going to be out for comment widely by civil society and everybody very soon. I mean, I think within a week or two we'll be able to send things out widely for comment. This really is an opportunity to have to really inform what those targets wind up looking like. I think, for example, in the case of non-discrimination targets, people are wrestling with that here, and it's hard. That's such a big universe of non-discrimination. What are the metrics for that? I think in the end, you have to make choices about what are proxy measures that make sense in non-discrimination. I think most people think that targets are most effective when there aren't 100 of them, but rather there's a few that really focus attention. So it's going to be a matter of making choices about what are a few metrics, proxies that can really drive progress on non-discrimination. I personally think it makes sense to have something around non-discrimination in the healthcare setting. I think we need to use these to make sure we've addressed issues among key populations and greater equity there in terms of service access. There's a lot of different levels. I mean, in hearing human rights people talk about these, thinking about these targets, I've learned a lot in terms of the different ways that non-discrimination needs to work in terms of overall stigma within the population, the legal framework, people's access to getting solutions when they've been treated unfairly within the legal framework, how people are treated in the healthcare setting. So there's a lot of aspects to non-discrimination. It's going to be hard, I think, to make the choices about what are a few proxy measures there that can drive progress. But I think that's what you're going to be presented with, is a bunch of options in that space. I think there's every opportunity to help shape that. On prevention, as I said, UNAIDS has called out a 2020 incidence target for prevention that is would represent a steep decline in infection from where we are right now. But again, there's a whole lot of room to, within that, how do you treat key populations? We absolutely don't want it to be that you can make your incidence gains in terms of your gains in reducing incidence all in one group or by ignoring one group. We've got to design these targets so that they really drive an equity agenda. And so I think that's a big part of it. Again, those will be out in tandem with the non-discrimination draft targets for people to comment on.
Great, and a number of people have been emailing here. You say very soon. Is there a time frame? Is there a date that people can expect to see those in draft?
I think you'll see them within 2 weeks.
Within 2 weeks. Okay, great. One thing, and just to say parenthetically, I'm not even sure how I can phrase it as a question because it really is a comment from me. When I look at, I know we think a lot about 3x5 as really one of the hallmarks of target setting and its ability to influence. I think for me, another one from a prevention perspective that really resonates is what President Obama said a couple of years ago on World AIDS Day with respect to voluntary medical male circumcision. He laid out a target, and as I think we all see with 3x5, resources were aligned with the target of, in that case, 4.7 million circumcisions, and the target was met. So I think we have now a growing body of evidence of the importance of targets. So I guess a question really is, at the prevention level, and I think the idea of getting incidence below 500,000 new infections by 2020 is terrific, but in terms of the way in which advocates and others can feed into the prevention targets, where should people direct their energies and their focus when it comes to things like making sure circumcision targets don't get left behind, or that the advent of new prevention methods, as they become available, don't get left behind? Is there some insight? Because they're different than just scaling up treatment at great levels. So I'm wondering if you have guidance on where to direct that energy.
Well, I think send in that comment to UNAIDS to inform the prevention target for sure. I mean, that we absolutely, you know, people need to hear that here. And I know for sure that voluntary medical male circumcision is part of the costing exercise, and it's part of the assumption around how you drive infection down. There's no question about that. How that's reflected in the high-level target setting, you know, I think is up for discussion. I'm not committing on this, but I hope that there will be some kind of a publication, something short and useful, I hope, that, you know, comes alongside the prevention target that helps lays out what it means and helps advocates use it. And I think, you know, that is another place where, in a publication like that, we would want, you know, male circumcision and the issues there to be laid out. You know, I'm interested in also, first of all, we got to set the prevention and the non-discrimination target. But then, with all three of these things, we need to think about what are the analyses and materials and support that would help people make use of these targets at a national level and also with global donors. And so, you know, that's one more iteration down the road of, you know, how do we work together to make sure voluntary medical male circumcision is on the agenda?
Great. And I think that last point, Chris, both circumcision specifically, but just generally across the target setting, how do we ensure that people know what to do with these targets? The target's only as good as what people can do with it. So those kinds of tools, I think, from UNAIDS and from many other partners are going to be incredibly useful. More questions coming in, but let me pause and see if there are any questions from the line. Again, *7 to ask your question.
Chris?
Yes.
This is Steve Wakefield with the HIV Vaccine Trials Network in Seattle. And I'm wondering if, as you look at this work and the body of work, what are the ways people can connect with like-minded advocates other than just reading reports? What are the mechanisms for people who want to advocate for these goals moving forward to be connected?
That's a really good question. Hi, Wakefield. Good to hear from you. Let's answer that question together, you know, because I can't think of a more important thing for the Community Mobilization Division at UNAIDS to do than be part of that effort to help provide the materials to people to use as they will to drive evidence-based scale-up that's more equitable. That's what I think we should be all about. How do we bring people together in a dialogue around that? You know, I would love to do that with community organizations, not have it be just a UNAIDS thing, but have it be a partnership. But definitely would want to be part of the partnership. you know, where we can have different kinds of dialogue platforms. Maybe people who are interested in this stuff have a massive Google group. Maybe we do regular webinars of some sort or calls. All of that's possible. I would like to be part of all of that, and I'd like to do it in partnership. And I think that's a big part of what comes next.
Great. Thanks, Wakefield, and thanks, Chris. There's a young man from, I think, AmFAR with his hand raised. Michael, do you want to hit star 7 and ask your question?
Yeah. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Chris. Greetings from your friends at AmFAR.
Hello, sir.
Thanks for a really provocative presentation in a good sense. And I think you outlined some of the really key challenges here in terms of things that all of us need to be thinking about and doing. Clearly, we really need as much information as we can, you know, put at our disposal and you know, among our colleagues. We need good information tools. But one key piece of this seems to me that we really have to ensure that there's a platform for dialogue among civil society and other champions working in HIV and AIDS with key opinion leaders, whether they are in government or in religious settings. I'm just wondering, thinking downstream a little bit, what role might UNAIDS play in terms of helping to broker some of those dialogues? Because it seems so crucial that we do have some very adversarial stances taken in some of these settings, especially with regard to stigma and discrimination, whether it's around key populations or around HIV. And, of course, obviously, resource allocation is a key piece of this. So I'm just curious what future role UNAIDS might play in that regard.
Yeah. I think there's a couple ways that UNAIDS comes at that. You may know Richard Gorinsky, who is leading kind of efforts at UNAIDS to look at LGBT issues, rights issues, and he has actually a regular publication called Equal Eyes that he sends out with kind of updates of what's going on. UNAIDS is involved in a few ways, being active in countries that have repressive laws against LGBT people, and there's room to do more. I think Richard is a great contact on the rights side of that, and I can certainly put you in touch with him. And Michael, I know you're in touch with him already. And then I think different other key populations groups that face marginalization, legal sanctions, there's particular staff people that are handling those issues too, both for people who inject drugs, sex workers. Drop me a note, I can connect you with those folks. I think the other question is, in addition and alongside the rights, is how do we get to scale with services that are evidence-based for key populations groups in places where those groups have good rights and in places where they really don't have rights. It's different challenges all over the earth, as you know. But I mean, one thing I'd love to be part of is getting the science out about, what kinds of services need to be brought to scale for different key populations groups to be effective. We now have had, over the last 6 years, for example, 3 Lancet special issues on key populations, one on people who inject drugs, one on MSM, and most recently sex workers that came out in Melbourne. We need to, I think, all of us collectively do a better job of putting that science to work and asking ourselves what the implications are of getting to scale for key populations and help people in countries do that advocacy. It's so hard when there's such limited data in countries, when there are such fiscal constraints within the country setting. So I'd love to see UNAIDS do more. I'd love to see our office do more in terms of getting the evidence out and help people think about how to use that evidence very directly in terms of debates around global fund concept notes and going to country operational plan meetings that PEPFAR holds. They're now required to include civil society in working with national governments. Let's keep talking. I mean, I want to do more in the area of helping advocates around key populations, and that obviously is absolutely fundamental to these targets adding up to anything.
You know, Chris, you know, and thank you so much, Michael, for the question, and Chris, for the answer. You know, thinking about the evidence and about the literature that exists, and you're absolutely right, there are some amazing resources in The Lancet and other publications, too. And it actually reminds me of a question that just came in from a fabulous advocate colleague in Uganda, who reminded me of something that came up in Melbourne when 90-90-90 was first discussed. A young advocate said, to Michelle Sidibe, wait a minute, I thought we were trying to get to zero, now you want us to get to 90. And all kidding aside, this fabulous advocate in Uganda just wrote in and said, but, you know, they've been using these 90-90-90 targets in some of their work in India and in Uganda, and she said that, but even amongst leading policymakers, there's a lot of confusion about those numbers, because those percentages, I mean, if you work with the day-to-day, yes, you get to the 73%, that becomes obvious. But she's asking, you know, can we come up with absolute numbers, particularly at the country level, because the percentages she describes are not helping advocacy? And is there something that UNAIDS, particularly at the country level, is or can be doing to attach numbers to help the advocacy move from journal publications and UN documents to practice on the ground?
That is a really great point. I think that makes a lot of sense. I will push for that. I mean, I think that makes absolute sense. To take the 90s and do the math for the country level and make that part of what we provide to folks to help them, you know, do their own advocacy. So, yeah, I think we should do that. Let me push forward with that piece of it. I also want to just apologize for the messaging confusion. I think that's real. Because, you know, we have the zeros. In the past there were other 90s. We're only saying 90-90-90 now in the context of the treatment targets that I talked about today. And we're trying to get really clear that that's what the 90s mean. And we need to do a better job of explaining them and getting it out there. And I agree. I think the absolute number pieces is really important to that. So point taken. I will work on it. I promise.
Great, Chris. Thank you. I know we're getting near the top of the hour. I do want to make sure before people begin to jump up, you know, you've been incredibly open and transparent, and you've given a lot of people, all of us, in fact, your email address. Obviously, there are a lot of issues to be directed places, UNAIDS country offices. Who does someone talk to about VMMC and prevention targets? Who do you talk to about non-discrimination? I worry a bit that this is all going to, you know, overwhelm your inbox. Is there a list or key context of who advocates, you know, if I have a question about issue X or geography Y, here's who I contact, or do people really, should they really come through you? What's the best way to make sure that there are abilities for people to follow up?
Well, you know, I'd rather be in touch with people and have my inbox flooded than not be in touch with people.
Okay.
So I'm happy to be to get emails. Some of the time, the response is just going to be forwarding that on, and people will see. You know, I'll keep their email on it, but then forward it to the right staff person. But I can only do this and be useful if I'm in touch with folks. So I'm very up for being in touch with folks, and I will forward things on to the right person. You know, and I'll put people on our master list for regular updates.
No, that's fantastic, and that is very much what community mobilization is about. And for those, you know, I should make sure people realize, when I did your introduction, people may not fully realize that you've been at UNAIDS for all of 6 months. I know that all of us are excited that you are there and helping to facilitate this, and that there is a voice that many of us on the outside in civil society can engage with. And we will, I think, all of us happily fill your inbox. I think at some point, if collectively we can work together so people know who else in UNAIDS are the people to congratulate for successes and to complain to when things aren't moving, in addition to keeping you in the loop, would be great. There were a number of other questions that are seemingly disparate that I'm going to put all of them to you now, Chris, but, you know, people talking about various populations. A great question and comment about people who inject drugs getting, you know, left behind. A number of comments about how the United States, when you look at all of the data that you presented at the country level, the U.S. actually looks worse in many respects than many of the countries you highlighted, to issues of drug pricing, which is worse in the U.S. than anywhere else, to issues of prevention being left behind. So I guess I'd love, just before you have to run, it seems that what I think all of those comments lead to is, where's the comprehensive voice, whether it's comprehensive geography, whether it's comprehensive response, prevention, treatment, and non-discrimination, whether it's comprehensive in terms of a range of populations. Have we got to a point where we become so balkanized in our responses and our issues, and what's your sense of that, and what would be some suggested ways forward so nothing gets left behind geographically, intervention, or population?
I think I agree that's the whole point. I think keep telling UNAIDS it needs to be that. We need to keep telling each other to do that. I think it's, you know, sometimes when targets get set, it's easy to do the things that are easiest to do. And, you know, we need to make sure the targets are, you know, driving us to grapple with the tough stuff. People who inject drugs, and treatment and harm reduction access for folks who inject drugs, that is a major, major piece. You know, it just can't be that we're driving towards steep reductions in incidence and mortality, but leaving groups like that behind. So we need an accountability function in civil society. I think, you know, UNAIDS, we should help with that and help keep eyes on that prize. But we need to be, you know, we need better data and we need to be constantly asking ourselves, do we have a message that includes prevention and treatment and rights? Are we addressing all the populations most at risk? There's no easy answer to it. I think we all need to keep holding ourselves accountable.
Great. Chris, thank you so very much. Additional questions and comments have come in. I will urge people to certainly feed it directly to Chris, and for those of you who are not looking at the screen, it is collinsch@unaids.org, as well as his Twitter handle. You should follow him. We will continue this conversation, I think, particularly from an AVAC perspective. The focus on prevention and non-discrimination along with treatment becomes so, so very important. Chris and I have talked a lot, and a number of people always talk about the 3x5 as the beginning of a new era of target setting in the AIDS response. And I'm reminded recently, as head of the World Bank, he said what he reflects on in having set the 3 million mark was to set an audacious time-limited goal, use it to establish a ringing collective priority, not just a single issue, but a collective priority. And once everybody knows what they're doing and being measured on, and I think this issue of accountability, push every which way to achieve it. And that is not just about 90-90-90. That is, if this epidemic is to be ended, it will take non-discrimination, it will take prevention, it will take treatment. And I know everybody on this call knows that. And I think we all look forward to working with you, Chris, and with UNAIDS to making sure that there are clear targets and clear deliverables and clear accountability across the board. So thank you so, so much for being part of this webinar series. Thank all of you on the line. We will have additional webinars in the latter couple of months of the year to round out this research and reality series, and how do we really translate evidence, whether it's from research or from target setting, into impact. And look forward to working with you, Chris, and UNAIDS, and with all of you on the line to ensure that goes forward. So please be in touch with us if there are issues you want to raise on future webinars. And Chris has said it, please be in touch with him to ensure that we collectively do the right thing. So thanks very much. Have great evenings, afternoons, or mornings for those further west. Thanks, everybody.